order the House Committee on Business and Labor for March 8th, 2003. We're going to take 2013, sorry.
Got 10 years younger.
2003 was not a good year, now we think about it, so 2013. We're going to start, we're going to stay in order of the bills. We're going to open up 2332 and then close it, and then reopen it up later and then continue on. So I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2332 for Representative Tomei.
Can you do an overview first?
Yes, and if you could summarize the bill, please.
Sure. Members of the committee, this is House Bill 2332, and this requires license premise for alcohol consumption and meeting specified criteria to obtain a nightclub endorsement from the OLCC. It directs the OLCC to adopt rules establishing required elements of safety and security plan required for the nightclub, and also allows the OLCC to establish annual fees for the nightclub endorsement.
Okay, thank you, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm State Representative Carolyn Tomei from House District 41, which is Milwaukee, Oak Grove, and Southeast Portland. Thank you so much for allowing me to come and speak to the committee this morning and for having a hearing on this bill. For many years, residents in my district have had problems with raucous behavior, disruptive conduct, and street crime that spills over from late-night bars and taverns in our neighborhoods. They find trash, dirty needles, and other drug paraphernalia on their sidewalks. They observe drug deals going down. Their children see these drug deals going down. They see men publicly urinating in the yards, and these incidents are in addition to violent acts that occur, drawing the attention of law enforcement. Moreover, many times these establishments tend to cluster in certain areas. When one opens, a new late bar springs up nearby so that bar hoppers can easily move from one bar to another. These problems are often drawn to the attention of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission investigators, but so far the OLCC has been unable or unwilling to help resolve these neighborhood conflicts. Statutory authority is limited and investigative staff is scarce. These facilities require more work from OLCC staff, and they should be required to pay their fair share. Working with OLCC representatives, we've developed this bill, House 2332, to give them more tools and resources to deal with these problematic late-night drinking establishments. Specifically, this bill establishes a special nightclub endorsement for full or limited on-premise licensed establishments. Bars that meet certain objective criteria must apply for and receive this nightclub endorsement. They are subject to more rigorous initial scrutiny, requiring more stringent safety and security plans. There is ongoing compliance monitoring, and to cover this additional work for OLCC, they will pay higher fees. Who is subject to this nightclub endorsement? The criteria are size, a capacity of at least 100, hours of operation. They serve alcohol any time between the hours of 11 p.m. and 2:30 a.m. and gross receipts to help distinguish it from a Sherry's or an Olive Garden. The gross receipts from the sale of alcohol, admission and cover charges, and lottery receipts exceeds that of food and non-alcoholic beverages. We're trying to make the net big enough to cover these places that have historically been shown to cause more problems, yet small enough not to catch your local neighborhood hangout. We've also included a waiver process for organizations that host a fundraiser, a special event, or a one-time occasion that would qualify it as a nightclub. We don't want to include them in this category, of course. You will see on page 2, line 6, the actual amount of the application fee is yet to be determined. We want the fee to be commensurate with the amount of extra work the licensing and monitoring of these facilities will take. I'm hoping that the OLCC folks here today can help us determine what that should be. And colleagues, House Bill 2332 by no means takes care of all the issues surrounding neighborhood and nightclub relations. You'll see that from some of the other bills discussed here in committee today. This bill is only a small step, but one to make sure that OLCC has the resources and the authority to more closely regulate where, when, and how nightclubs operate in our communities. And I urge your support for 2332. And I'm open to any questions.
Thank you very much. You have questions of Representative Tomei? Okay, thank you. No questions. We're going to close the hearing temporarily on House Bill 2332 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2702. There are a lot of people signed up for this one, and so we're going to be limiting people to 3 minutes of testimony when they come up. Just keep in mind. And if you have written testimony, if you could just summarize it, we would appreciate it. Okay, if you could also summarize this bill, please.
Okay. So here we have House Bill 2702. This is a process by which the OLCC can adopt a rule declaring an alcohol impact area upon petition by municipality. It establishes a process for granting exemptions and for review of the rule. There's also an emergency clause associated.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for allowing me to speak about this bill before I go back to my busy office. Chair Doherty and members of the committee, I'm State Representative Carolyn Tomei from House District 41. Colleagues, alcohol abuse and public intoxication create serious public safety and quality of life concerns for families, individuals, and business owners in my district, and indeed all over our state. In response to these concerns, the City of Portland has asked for the ability to petition the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to create alcohol impact areas. We'll call them AIAs after I said those words. AIAs could be used to limit the sale of certain types of low-price, high-alcohol content beverages that are the source of much of the street drinking and public drunkenness. Created with community and business input, AIAs have proven to help curtail this problem. And two examples are in Washington State, and they illustrate their effectiveness. The city of Tacoma saw a 35% decrease in emergency medical services and a 51% decrease in liquor in the park public service calls in the year following implementation of their alcohol impact area. Also, Seattle saw a 9% decrease in sobering unit van pickups and a 15% decrease in adult liquor violations in the 2 years following the implementation of the AIA. As you may recall, last year the City of Portland had begun serious discussions with the OLCC in regards to establishing an AIA. Then the OLCC received a legal opinion that there were not statutory authority to move forward. House Bill 2702, this bill clarifies the OLCC's authority to approve the creation of alcohol impact areas. This will be a valuable tool to reduce acute public safety problems created by public drunkenness and alcohol abuse. There are others here who can provide more details, but I would urge you to move this bill out of committee and onto the floor with a do pass recommendation. And welcome you, Senator Monith-Anderson.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'm State Senator Lori Monith-Anderson, and thank you for allowing me to testify on House Bill 2702. Let me just set the stage. I represent Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, and Fairview. And a few years back, The mayor, Mayor Weatherby of Fairview, came to me and said, we are really having problems with OLCC in trying to get them to help us with an establishment that was located on 138th and Sandy. The establishment was having a lot of, it probably was gang activity, but drunkenness, fights, et cetera, and there was a lot of complaints from the neighbors. We needed to take care of it because it was a burden on the police. And I think in your packet you should have a letter from Mayor Weatherby and Ken Johnson, Chief of Police from the City of Fairview. And so they came to me after they couldn't get anything done. And so I worked with OLCC and with the good lobbyists from the Restaurant Association trying to come up with something. We did, but it really wasn't. It was pretty watered down. If we had had this alcohol impact area bill, we could have solved the problem a whole lot sooner than we did. The establishment now has changed management, and it's going fine, and they're not having any problems at all. And I envision this alcohol impact area as really being used very little, at least in rural part. But it seemed like my mayor from Fairview was really having a lot of difficulty on a major concern in their district. So that's really all I had to say. I just wanted to sort of set the stage that it isn't just the city of Portland. We did have an incident in Fairview a few years ago. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of the panelists? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you again for allowing us to speak.
Hey, we're going to go through, and we've got quite a few people signed up, and we're going to go through and just do for and against. So the first panel is Chief Pete Kearns, Sergeant Kevin Hogan, and Amanda Fritz, Commissioner Amanda Fritz, please. Counselor Amanda Fritz. Commissioner Amanda Fritz. If you can make sure you identify yourself for the record.
I'll go ahead and begin. My name is Pete Kearns. I'm the police chief in Eugene, and I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2702. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify this morning. Our story goes back to 2009 when a new market moved into the space at first in Jefferson and started selling fortified beverages. That part of town has a dense population and mostly low-income housing. And across the street from an apartment complex where the market is a playground, basketball courts, and a park that at the time was mostly occupied by people who were drinking fortified wine, who were publicly intoxicated and committing crimes related to that kind of behavior. In the summer of 2009, a homeless man sleeping in his sleeping bag right in that park was beaten to death, and it brought quite a bit of attention to the crime problem that we had there. One of our sergeants, aware of establishment of alcohol impact areas and their effect on crime, went to all the markets within a 3x7 block area around the park and asked them to participate in a voluntary ban, which they did for 90 days. We compared the crime over those 90 days to that in the previous year, and we found that during the same time previous year there were 187 crimes in that immediate area, and during the time of the ban there were only 56 reported crimes or those discovered by police. In fact, there were 55 citations for open container violations in the previous year and only 7 during the time when fortified wine had been reduced. We found that violent crime, quality of life crimes had all gone down. In Lane County, you're probably aware, we have a dramatically underfunded, significantly underfunded criminal justice system, and there are many unfortunate consequences of that. Repeat offenders are committing crimes and causing victimization day after day after we arrest them and rearrest them. We have new victims who would otherwise not have the experience of crime in their homes and their families if our criminal justice system was able to manage their behavior better. that's the unfortunate side of the experience that we're having. The interesting opportunity that it creates is that we are compelled to look for other ways to manage crime, and this is one of those that would have a massive impact on street crime that we see in Eugene.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair Doherty and committee members. My name is Kevin Hogan, and I'm a sergeant with the Portland Police Bureau's Drugs and Vice Division. I want to thank you for the opportunity to offer my testimony in support of House Bill 2702. I've been a police officer in Portland for over 15 years. The majority of my time has been spent working as a uniformed patrol officer and a patrol supervisor in the core downtown area. I'm currently assigned to the Drugs and Vice Division and supervise the Police Bureau's liquor license investigator. My experience has given me considerable exposure to the street-level livability and public safety issues created by chronic drunkenness, as well as knowledge of the bigger policy and procedural issues involved with the proposed establishment of an alcohol impact area. Having worked many years in a crowded urban environment, I've seen firsthand the assaults, sex crimes, vandalism, and disruption of public order attributed to chronic alcohol use. I've also seen neighborhood livability degraded by the trash, public urination, and passed out inebriants that are the hallmark of an area plagued by an overabundant supply of inexpensive, high alcohol content beverages. I've personally arrested multiple chronic inebriants so many times for drinking in public and drinking in public places that I've memorized their names and dates of birth. And conservatively, I estimate that 50% of the calls that I was involved in while I was working uniform patrol in the downtown area had some kind of alcohol component involved. In addition, I've had numerous conversations with business owners and managers in the downtown area who complained that the safety and livability conditions created by street drinking and public inebriants has negatively impacted their business by driving customers to other areas of town where the conditions were cleaner and safer. I've spent countless hours sitting on courthouse benches waiting to testify in public drinking cases against chronic inebriants who knew there was little recourse the court system had for their actions. In my current assignment, I've had the opportunity to research other communities which have enacted AIAs. Seattle and Tacoma both enacted AIAs several years ago. Both reported initial positive results, which included significant drops in alcohol-related arrests and sobering station use. In talking with officers from the Seattle Police Department, they told me that their initial results have tapered off due to the manner in which their state regulates alcohol sales within an AIA. Their AIAs contain a banned product list which prohibits the sale of certain alcohol labels within their AIA. Seattle officers told me that the lengthy process they have to go through to show new products are part of the problem within an AIA, coupled with distributors' ability to bring in new but similar products, has diminished the effectiveness of their AIA program. In summary, I'd just like to say that I feel strongly that a properly administered alcohol impact area can have substantial public safety and livability benefits for communities across the state. And I also feel that it would save valuable law enforcement, EMS, and court resources as well. I thank you for the opportunity this morning to testify before the committee, and I'm open to any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Fritz?
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. I'm Portland City Commissioner Amanda Fritz. Thank you for holding the hearing on this very important bill. In parts of our city, street drinking causes serious public safety and community livability problems. From fighting and disorderly conduct to public urination and littering, residents, business owners, and visitors are all too often subject to this behavior. The City of Portland works with LLCC inspectors and through our nuisance codes to address problems with individual establishments, either formally or through voluntary means. However, problems within areas that warrant alcohol impact areas are too saturated to be effectively meaningful through individual compliance. That's why we need this important tool. OLCC and the City of Portland already thought we had this tool and went through a two-year process to establish our alcohol impact area, only to get a different Attorney General's opinion from the previous one 15 years ago. So we thought we had it. Please clarify that, yes, indeed, we should be able to move forward with this important tool. We can deal with these problems reactively, or we can deal with them preventatively, and this bill would authorize a preventative tool. It's used in locations where there are
both problems of density of licenses and a density of public safety and community problems related to those sales. They are only used where all other options have been exhausted, because it does take a lot of effort to establish the alcohol impact area. In times of limited resources, we've come up with creative ways to solve problems. For the past 4 years, the city has been able to add police and DA staff to address problems reactively. We can no longer afford those extra resources, and it's not the most cost-effective or appropriate solution. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I urge your support.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of the panelists? Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. You were mentioning how it would drive the good customers for certain businesses to other neighborhoods, and I couldn't help but think about the chronic inebriants you were referring to. What happens to them? Do they quit drinking? I mean, do they just move somewhere else? Is there some evidence that it just doesn't spread to another area?
So if I could, I'd like to answer that. So in my research that in conversations that I had with officers up in the Seattle area, there is a certain amount of displacement that occurs, which is exactly what you're referring to. But to the extent that the problem becomes displaced and spread out, it's not as visible and impacted in a small designated area. The entire problem isn't displaced, however, and what ends up happening is that because certain alcohol items are restricted within a given area, those inebriants obviously aren't going to stop drinking, but they're able to access less alcohol for their money, and that in and of itself helps to address the problem.
The other part of the research we found, we are concerned about the same thing, because our alcohol impact area was going to be a pretty limited downtown area, and some of the nearby neighborhoods were concerned about that, so we would continue to monitor. But part of the issue is, even if it does, people do have to go elsewhere to buy their low-cost, high alcohol beverages, it gives them that a little bit more time to think about, is it worth the effort? And in terms of alcoholism and affecting behaviors, even that may be enough of a deterrent, especially now that we don't have the free rail system downtown. But it's definitely something that we would be concerned about and monitor.
Thank you.
And Chair, if you don't mind, I'd like to add just one thing. You know, there is an assumption that crime is a finite thing, and that like a balloon, if you push in one place, it emerges someplace else. But as we've studied, as law enforcement has become more academic over the last 15 or 20 years, we've learned that the broken window theory is actually true. There can be a culture of crime, and crime trends gain their own momentum. When crime goes up, it gains its own momentum because the culture approves of more. The culture of those who engage in crime sort of encourage it. And where we can cause it to go down, we use as many of the techniques, affordable techniques as we can. Crime is driven down, and it gains its own momentum because the culture of crime changes. And where we can use affordable methods like this to change that behavior, it doesn't tend to emerge in other places necessarily. As long as we can constantly disrupt where it concentrates over time, across a community like ours, crime will drop.
Yeah, fine. Thank you. Other questions? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just out of curiosity, why do you think the volunteer program didn't work in Eugene? So you had a voluntary program, you said, where you had them take the alcohol off the shelf, and why did that end, or why do you think it didn't keep going?
What I've reported on is just the 90-day period that where the market strictly adhered to the voluntary ban, and we compared those 90 days to 1 year previous. I believe that many of the market owners decided to not go back to the sale of those products because the clientele that they had coming in and out of their store weren't helpful for the business, and so they saw their own personal benefit in not selling those things.
Any other questions of the panelists? Thank you very much. Okay, the next three we have William Huffman, Katie Jacoby, and which I'm going to butcher your name, and Erez Klein.
I'm not butchered at all.
Oh, thank you.
Uh-huh.
And again, if you could state your name for the record, and if you have written testimony, to summarize it, please.
Start off here. My name is William Huffman, Madam Chairman Doherty, and the panel. Thank you for allowing us to speak. I have two 7-Eleven stores in Coos Bay, Oregon. I'm also president of our Franchise Owners Association in Oregon, so I represent about 100 7-Eleven stores. We want to be able to sell products that the state has deemed legal for us to sell. We feel that we work hard at being responsible retailers. We have a very comprehensive training program that teaches our staff who to sell to, who not to sell to, and how to not sell to them safely. As I was sitting here listening to the previous panels, I thought to myself, you know, kind of what's going on here is that they're asking private business to take over the role of what our police officers and safety officials work on. And there's an economic impact when we lose the ability to sell certain products. We've worked hard at increasing our business so that we can employ more people, and if business goes backwards, obviously you can't employ as many people. We want to work with OLCC. We want to be responsible retailers. When there is a problem and they come to us, we've been very responsive. But we want statewide rules to apply to everybody. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. My name is Erez Klein. I'm the regional beer and wine buyer for Whole Foods Market in the Pacific Northwest. We currently have 7 stores in Oregon and take great pride in offering our customers exceptional products, including beer, wine, and cider. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and to share our opposition to House Bill 2702. Let me state clearly that we support the goal of reducing illegal drinking and littering, but House Bill 2702 has an overly broad reach and a flawed approach. First, authorizing a ban on legal products in Oregon isn't fair to the vast majority of people who drink these products legally. Although we realize that there may be a few beverages that are more frequently found littered and used by illegal public drinkers, the effort should be on enforcing illegal drinking laws and providing substance abuse treatment to those in need, not banning alcohol products. Second, HB 2702 has a statewide impact when the problem is focused in one area of Portland, Old Town. Third, even if the bill were narrow to apply only to Portland, it would still be the wrong approach. At its core, an alcohol impact area sets a geographic boundary and bans the sale of certain alcoholic beverages by every business in the area, which simply moves whatever problem exists to the areas next door. Expanding the impact area or starting with a large impact area doesn't change that fact. There will always be a place across the street from an impact area, and the illegal drinking and littering will simply shift. House Bill 2702 is ostensibly about simply authorizing the OLCC to do rulemaking for an alcohol impact area as requested by a city. And this is not an abstract concept. The OLCC was developing rules at the City of Portland's request before the Department of Justice determined that the OLCC didn't have rulemaking authority. So let me share the reality of what it would mean to Whole Foods Market if we were within an alcohol impact area, along the lines of the price alcohol content formula impact area that Portland requested. We would be prohibited from selling thousands of products that are not associated with illegal drinking or littering. It would prevent us from setting our prices and sales as the market demands. Whole Foods sells over 1,000 beer products that would not have been allowed under the proposed size alcohol content criteria. We would have been prohibited from selling single beers, which is how our seasonal and specialty beers are typically sold. We would not have been able to sell most European beers, which are typically over 5.75% in alcohol content. We couldn't have sold any of our top-selling 22-ounce beers. Sake, Port, Madeira, Marsala all would have exceeded the 13.5% maximum alcohol content for wine. As I stated earlier, Whole Foods opposes House Bill 2702. But if the committee believes, however, that something should advance out of committee, then please consider the list system implemented in Tacoma and Seattle, which impacts the few specific products that are most frequently used by illegal public drinkers and littered. but you should know that they are experiencing the very issue I mentioned, where the problem simply shifts to another neighborhood. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much. Next.
Good morning. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Katie Jacoy, and I'm Western Counsel for the Wine Institute. We represent 926 California wineries and associated businesses. Thank you for the opportunity to explain why we also oppose House Bill 2702. House Bill 2702 permits any city in the state of Oregon to petition the OLCC for an alcohol impact area. AIAs are simply a way for cities to ban legal alcohol beverage products from the retail stores, not the restaurants that was mentioned earlier. It doesn't apply to restaurants at all. This effectively pushes the problem drinkers outside of the boundaries to purchase the banned products. Oftentimes, chronic inebriates will come back into the downtown core to drink because that's where services are provided to them. As we heard from the chronic inebriates that testified at the City of Portland, this won't stop them from drinking. In fact, there's actually a state-run liquor store that's within the boundaries of the AIA that was proposed by Portland, and Portland did not propose to ban any spirits products. Wine is not a significant contributor to this problem. The data that Portland gathered in their process to petition the OLCC, they had public drinking incidences that they noted. There were 55 out of 720 that involved wine products. This is only 7.6% of the proposed problem. If AIA authority is granted, though, there is no need for Oregon to reinvent the wheel. AIAs have been in existence in Washington for 10 years. I'm from the state of Washington, and I've worked with the Washington State Liquor Control Board on implementing their AIAs up in Washington. They have 6 mandatory AIAs in 3 Washington cities, 2 in Seattle, 2 in Tacoma, and 2 in Spokane. One of the things that there was a question about whether the problem moves, and there has been, it has been shown in Washington that the problem has moved, and each city who's implemented an AIA has implemented a second AIA because they see the shift. The rest of the city wants to see the same positive impact that was created in the first AIA. So there is just an expansion within other areas of cities. And there's also a voluntary AIA in Vancouver, Washington, which has worked to solve their problem. So they didn't even move to the Washington State Liquor Control Board for a mandatory AIA. Because these are legal products, Washington requires proof that any specific product is reasonably linked to the problem in the area. This approach in Washington has resorted in only 8 fortified wines being banned. This approach has worked, despite what the Portland officer said. The Washington State Liquor Control Board says that the product-specific lists actually do work, and there's a provision in the Washington State rule that says that if a product is materially similar, all they have to do is write to the Liquor Control Board, show how the similarity is, and that product will also be banned. Portland, however, when they proposed their AIA, didn't take the Washington product-specific approach. Instead, they wanted to ban based on broad categories of products. Our research showed that in the Safeway that's within the AIA borders, there would have been 200 wine products that would be banned from the shelves, but that had little or no relationship to the problem.
Speed up a little bit.
So just to summarize, we oppose the House Bill 2702.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. We have quite detailed testimony from you, yes. Written testimony, to cover a lot of the information. Any questions of the panelists? About Representative Kenmer, then?
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Huffman, you talked about selling safely and working with OLCC. I wonder if you could just give us a couple examples, please.
Microphone.
OLCC.
If you could pull the microphone just a little closer. Thank you.
OLCC, as you know, does stings they will provide education for clerks. They'll come in and help us train our clerks if we ask them to. They provide pamphlets that every clerk that goes to work at 7-Eleven has to read the pamphlets. There's a responsible retailer program that most of us adhere to. So they work with us in helping us do the sale legally.
And some of the standards, excuse me, another question, please.
Some of the standards?
Well, for selling safely, what's that?
Well, we train our staff to look for people that are inebriated.
Because it's against the law.
But I will tell you, it's hard. Some of these chronic people that you're talking about,
yeah.
It's hard. It's not easy. They're very good at disguising it. But you watch. You watch how people are walking. You watch how they're, you listen to how they're talking. You try to smell any alcohol in their breath. You can tell the difference many times between somebody that just got off of work at the mill in Coos Bay at 7 o'clock and wants a beer, and somebody that's been waiting for 7 o'clock to unlock the beer doors to get something. And if that person comes in first time in the morning, and then they come in again at 10, we may not sell to them because we know what's going on there. So we really do try to be responsible about it.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wendt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Klein, would you provide me with a list of the products that House Bill 2702 would have prohibited Whole Foods from selling?
I can certainly do that. The list is always changing as new products become available, and our authorization list changes based on sales, so products fall off and on, but I can certainly give you what is current.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any other questions on the panel? Thank you very much for testifying. Okay, next panel is Scott Winkles, Andy Smith, and Cindy Robert.
Good morning, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, Andy Smith for the City of Portland. Just wanted to take an opportunity to hit on a couple more points that weren't addressed earlier. First of all, this bill does not delegate a new authority to OLCC. Rather, it simply clarifies what has been widely understood to be well within the Commission's authority for nearly 20 years. A 1994 Attorney General opinion provided the legal basis and justification for the rule that's currently on the OLCC's books. In 2011, the City of Portland used the rule to petition for an alcohol impact area in a defined part of downtown. The 2012 Attorney General opinion had the effect of calling the 1994 opinion into question and the legal authority of the Commission to create alcohol impact areas. As a result, the rulemaking process for the City of Portland's petition was put on hold pending legislative clarification. Therefore, the bill before you today does not create a new authority, but rather clarifies existing authority. Second, this bill requires significant public process before a jurisdiction can file a petition with the Commission, including an opportunity for public comment, an attempt to gain voluntary compliance, an attempt for affected businesses to explain why they should be exempt. It also requires a petitioning jurisdiction to document chronic problems and explain why proposed limitations will address those problems. In other words, a petitioning jurisdiction has to prove their case to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission before they can ever accept the petition in the first place. For our purposes, it took us 2 years, 1,200 staff hours, and it resulted in a 300-page petition, which reflected the process that I just described. Finally, safeguards are built into the process, including requiring the Commission to review the rule after 1 year to determine whether the rule should continue to be in effect, and this also includes an opportunity for public comment. The bill also provides an opportunity for a licensee to file for an exemption from the rule if they can show that they're not part of the problem. I also wanted to clarify that, well, what I think that the extensive public process provides is sort of a guarantee that, you know, jurisdictions across the state aren't going to enter into alcohol impact areas or the petitioning process lightly. It requires a significant amount of work. So I think that the idea that this is going to become a statewide issue immediately is a little bit of a red herring. So with that, I'll finish up and turn it over.
Thank you very much.
For the record, my name is Scott Winkles, and I represent the 242 cities that comprise the League of Oregon Cities. This is not a Portland issue. This is an issue that has come up in several communities across the state. We have been approached by for advice and consultation by the cities of Albany, by Roseburg, Springfield, Medford, I believe. Several cities across the state feel that they are being impacted by the off-premise sales of beverages, the primary purpose of which are to achieve the rapid impairment of the consumer. That is what we're trying to go after. We are not looking to address the high-end Madeira. We're not looking to address, to limit the sale of Oregon's artisan craft breweries. What we are looking for are beverages that people buy to get drunk, and to get drunk quickly. We cannot enter into this process until we can we wouldn't even be eligible to get an AIA designated in this city until we can clearly articulate evidence of a problem, evidence of declining commercial activity in an area, street drinking, criminal problems, public health issues. It is somewhat of a interesting argument that we would be looking to limit the sale of some of these high-end beverages that the average street drinker could only dream of purchasing. Again, this is not authority we're asking for that we could enter into arbitrarily or capriciously. This is something the city would have to do with very thought-out process, a very public process, and they would also have to, under the current rule, seek voluntary compliance from the affected businesses. For most of my cities, they would probably never get to an AIA petition, because the fact that we have that option available to us eventually, we believe would incentivize voluntary compliance, and we can address the problem locally without involving the OLCC. I would urge passage of this legislation.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert, and I represent the City of Medford. Alcohol impact areas aren't coming to the City of Medford anytime soon, but we can, in fact, understand that having these kind of limitations based on a petition by a local government would really benefit public safety. So I don't want to repeat anyone, but I do want to give you a little snapshot of the problem, an example of the numbers that would be submitted for the documentation required in House Bill 2702. The number of alcohol-related arrests in Medford in 2010 was 812. Minor in possession was 209, furnishing alcohol to a minor 29, liquor law violations 213, and DUI 361. The total direct cost to my law enforcement department for investigating and processing violations was just over $220,000. The indirect cost to the rest of the city administration was $181,000. This is citywide in Medford, but in Portland, you can get these numbers in a 3-block radius. So we see what's happening there, and we want public safety there to have the ability to control the community and their public safety costs. We think this is a neighborhood issue, a local issue, and we urge your support.
Thank you very much. Questions of the panels? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Andy, you were fortunate enough to come to my office, or maybe not as fortunate. I don't know how you walked out from there. Fortunate. Okay. But we had a discussion a little bit because just looking at this, but because this ban, I mean, as we've heard, covers probably over thousands of different alcohols that would be swept up in this. But the thing that it doesn't cover, and we kind of discussed, and luckily you and I are naive enough that we didn't know this, but the sergeant did, that HRD, or low-end high alcohol contents, are still available in those. And we were talking about people getting drunk quick. Well, rather than buying, you know, the typical low on the dough, go with the bow or an old English 8 or an 8 ball, whatever they call all of that, they're going to start buying hard alcohol, and that's going to get them up there a lot quicker, would it not?
Chair Doherty and Representative Widener, thanks for the question. I think that, you know, first of all, we don't look at alcohol impact areas as the solution to all street drinking problems. We understand that some of these folks are going to find ways to get drunk regardless. What we're trying to do is make it a little bit harder for them. First of all, I think liquor stores have a few additional protections built into the way they sell alcohol that potentially convenience stores don't. And the other thing is that if HRD becomes a rampant problem after an alcohol impact area is implemented in Portland, then I think that the legislation and the rule would provide an opportunity for us to go back and show that that's a new problem and potentially address that.
Okay, thank you.
So, let me follow
up. Quick follow-up, please.
So, basically go to playing outright prohibition in an area then, possibly like Monmouth did? And then we ran over to Independence and then came back to Monmouth?
Chair Doherty, Representative Widener. I mean, prohibition is not what we're looking for. I mean, we're microbrews, high-end wines, all that stuff are absolutely not what we're trying to regulate. I think that we're looking to do it in a fashion that targets certain problem products, and we're looking for the flexibility to ask for other products to come within the area should we be able to show that they're a problem. Do you want to add to something to that, Scott?
Chair Doherty, Representative Widener, I'm also a Western Wolf, and I was at the university when it was a dry town. And what I would say, without going into too many sordid episodes of my past, that separation...
Okay, my sister was there too, so I...
The separation that you had to go somewhere else to get to purchase alcohol did, in fact, limit drinking on that campus. Because what it enabled you to do is that once... You couldn't do multiple trips to the store. You couldn't go to the, I didn't have a car, but it did limit how much alcohol we could get, so that you had to go somewhere else. Did reduce the, my impression is that it did reduce the impact inside Monmouth.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, next up, Sean Miller, Dan Jarman, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of the Northwest Grocery Association in opposition to House Bill 2702. And I want to start out saying that, we agree with the problems with public inebriation that law enforcement talked about earlier. And, we want to be part of that solution. We don't like to see that in front of our stores and the streets and communities and neighborhoods that we serve. With that said, I just want to focus on a few things that were mentioned earlier, and that is with House Bill 2702, the arguments that Representative Tomei illustrated with some of the successes up in Washington, because Washington did lead the way on AIAs with their Seattle, Spokane, and Tacoma AIAs. Not here to dispute the effectiveness of those AIAs. However, the difference in what Washington did and what Oregon was looking at and at the OLCC process was just a completely different methodology and how to put an AIA together. And that's what I'd like to focus on today. The debate, and when you look at section, specifically page 2 of the bill, lines 11, talks about the rule imposing any uniform requirements, limitations, or prohibitions regarding alcohol sales. Very broad language, and so the debate quickly comes, how do you do it? There's two ways. There's product-specific, and there's a formula approach. Washington obviously led the way with a product-specific approach. You can look at the list. Again, very, and you heard it earlier, it's a easy formula on product-specific. They're looking for high alcohol content, very, very low price, cheap price. Something you can go in, buy something big. Again, these are products like Blast with 12% alcohol, Dog Bite, 10% alcohol, Earthquake High Gravity, 12% alcohol, in cans this big that they can get, a buck or two. I mean, these are very, very inexpensive products. These are the products that have been banned because law enforcement have identified those products as something that they can get access to and get drunk very easily. Again, the formula approach, which you heard earlier, would go in and take products that are on our shelves, and I'll use an example of Zupan's on Burnside, who would have been right inside the boundary of the AIA proposed, and yet has a very, very, if you've ever been in that store, it's a very good wine selection, a very good microbrew selection. Many of those products would have been outside the boundaries of that formula.
You could speed it up just a little bit, please.
And so, again, with the quickly, some of those examples, Madam Chair, the single container would have dealt with a lot of the microbrews that are way above the price points that are involved in these public inebriation. The bladder and box wines, very popular product in Portland, and that would have been prohibited. And then, again, the 14% threshold, many of those high-end wines actually would have been banned in that store because of that 14, where you may have 14.1, depending on, and I'll defer to the wine experts on that. But again, the burden was placed on the retailer instead of law enforcement in the city to identify those products. And so with that, Madam Chair, I'll conclude.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dan Jarman, representing the Oregon Wine Growers Association. We are very sympathetic to the cities that are trying to address the issue of chronic inebriates. Our concern with this bill is the very broad authority given to the OLCC and cities for doing it. It's not, it really is how you do it at the end of the day. Portland's solution, as you've heard from others, was to have a very broad ban on products and then basically put the burden on businesses to prove that your product was not a problem. We thought that was a real challenge, and we still think that's a challenge and not where this committee should go with this issue. Some examples that were talked about earlier, their broad ban had said any wine products more than 14% alcohol. Well, the alcohol content in wine is really dependent on the weather. We can't just make wine that's 13.9%. It's how the grapes grow throughout the year. 2009, for instance, a very warm year, especially toward the end of the growing season. Most of the wines were above 14%. We actually sent someone to the Safeway up in the park blocks to look at all of the Oregon wines that had greater than 14%, and they stopped counting at 100 because there were so many wines that were in that category. All of those wines would have been banned. We also have heard conversations today about fortified wines. Because it's a fortified wine doesn't mean it's a low-end wine that folks are using. Think about Oregon dessert wines. Fortified wine means wine with some distilled spirits added. Port, sherries, Madeiras, those are fortified wines. So be very careful when you're thinking about banning fortified wines. The final issue, which Sean just touched on, was the soft packaging. It would have outlawed soft packaging of wines. Think about the environmental movement now. Soft packaging in the Tetra containers is something that the wine industry is moving toward. We passed a bill out of this committee on growlers. It was because we're trying to do some things environmentally friendly with packaging, and the Portland ban would have basically outlawed those Tetra packaging or wines that are in bladders. So again, it's how a community or the OLCC seeks to implement an AIA that we have concerns with. We don't think Oregon wines at all are the problem, and if you're going to do anything, this committee, I think, needs to look at product by product bans. And thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions? Okay, thank you, gentlemen, very much. Okay, we now have Tom Parker and Tom Gallagher. And again, we're going to be short on time if we can summarize things that have not been testified to yet.
Sure.
Thank you. Tom?
Thank you, Chair Doherty. I'll try to be brief. I'm with Lines for Life. We're a nonprofit that works to prevent substance abuse. Of course, the biggest substance being abused is alcohol. Our angle on this really has to do with its impact on youth. And while you might not immediately think of youth in these alcohol impact areas, it really is a problem. For example, near Old Town, there's a high concentration of underage nightclubs. It's a very short walk over to any of these other areas where we have a lot of cheap alcohol available and high content. And as you know, this category of drinkers, they've talked about not only the street drinker, but also youth are not known for getting a drink and sipping it. For the most part, underage youth are trying to get a high alcoholic.
Mr. Parker, if you could identify yourself for the record.
I'm sorry, my name is, I thought I said that, Tom Parker with Lines for Life.
Thank you.
And youth are highly price sensitive. They are also looking for a cheap drunk, something that's high alcohol content and easy to get their hands on. We also know the studies clearly show that the sooner they start using alcohol and other substances, more likely they are to have a lifetime of substance abuse. So our concern is that, you know, you get to this area, it's very likely to for youth to engage in shoulder tapping, which is a procedure where you basically ask an adult of whatever character to buy alcohol for you, and it's really an easy fix. There's also a phenomenon right now with fake ID that is just highly passable, that you find that these youth in these areas are able to get into them and get their, you know, get what they need at a very cheap price. So again, our concern basically is about youth, the impact of high alcohol, cheap, cheap fortified spirits, that do the job really quickly for them and causes big problems.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Gallagher.
Tom Gallagher representing Portland Business Alliance and Clean and Safe Downtown, which is a subsidiary or affiliate of the Portland Business Alliance that deals with safety and livability in downtown Portland. We're here to support the bill. I'll say that. I'll also add, I don't think anybody has more content in the regulatory area than the Portland Business Alliance with the City of Portland. And I think that there have been a number of comments here made, especially things like list-based systems and so forth, and relationships with the city as we begin to develop this ordinance, that the Portland Business Alliance would pledge itself to work with in the sense of being on both sides of this issue. We have businesses downtown that sell products like this, and we also have a serious concern for the safety and livability of downtown Portland. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the panelists? Okay, thank you for your
Thank you for listening to us.
Okay, the last panel we have, we think, is Lindsay Atkins, Patrick Owen, and Thomas Irwin. Again, if you could just add to things that have not been brought up yet. Thank you. Go ahead. Yeah.
Good morning, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. My name is Lindsay Atkinson, and I am a community health analyst and prevention specialist for Lane County Public Health. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak to you on House Bill 2702. Lane County is in support of this bill because improving the public health, safety, and welfare of current and future generations of residents is a top priority for our community. This bill would give local jurisdictions a much-needed tool to address chronic alcohol-related problems that lead to public safety issues. It would decrease access to inexpensive, high-alcohol content beverages popular among youth and street drinkers, and it promotes a culture that reflects positive health norms for our young people. Similar to other counties throughout the state, the abuse and misuse of alcohol, including underage drinking, over-intoxication, and public inebriation is an underlying theme among many of the chronic problems our communities face. In Lane County, the death rate due to alcohol-induced causes is twice as high as the national average and higher than the state average. Excessive alcohol use, which includes underage and binge drinking, is the third leading cause of preventable death in the U.S. Because of the severity of alcohol-related consequences in our community, a year and a half ago, Lane County received funding to target prevention efforts towards reducing binge and high-risk drinking among our large young adult population. As a result, a coalition of private citizens and community agencies, including our local college and university partners, came together to develop strategies to address this issue. Effective alcohol prevention requires working across the spectrum from individual education and early intervention to setting clear norms and standards in our homes, schools, and communities. One important strategy is reducing youth and adult access to alcohol. And as it's been stated, research shows that cheap, high alcohol content beverages are not only popular among street drinkers, but among youth as well. Alcohol impact areas have been shown to be an effective prevention tool in decreasing chronic alcohol-related public safety problems, and we urge your support. Thank you
very much.
Madam Chair, my name is Patrick Owen. I want to thank you and the committee for taking the time to listen to us today. On behalf of Helen Ying, an active community member of Old Town Chinatown Neighborhood Association, has asked me to read her written testimony, which I will summarize.
Has it been submitted testimony? Or
it has been submitted.
Okay, if you could just summarize it, please.
Yes.
Thank you.
So Helen Ying supports the bill for the following reasons. It supports local control. It equips local governments with a powerful tool to address local conditions that contribute to problem drinking. The OLCC requires that local governments petitioning for an AIA approach businesses to voluntarily address issues, take public comment, document chronic public safety problems, and explain how an AIA would alleviate the documented problems. This process ensures that the community, including businesses and residents, are engaged in identifying problems and solutions. It supports safe and healthy environments, highly visible sales of cheap, high alcohol content beverages, and the street drinking.
Mr. Owen, we have the written testimony. If you'd just like to summarize her major points, please.
All right. In summary, Ms. Ying supports the bill because it provides local jurisdictions a powerful tool to address local public safety issues. It provides the opportunity to reduce access to high alcohol products known to be harmful, and it allows cities and local jurisdictions to create positive norms that support health for all, including youth and vulnerable populations.
Thank you. Thank you for her testimony. We appreciate it. Ms. Irwin?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Tom Irwin. I'm the Oregon Liquor Control Commission Government Affairs and Communications Director. The OLCC does support creating statutory authority, explicit statutory authority for the agency to establish alcohol impact areas by rule. We believe that we don't have such authority currently, and it's not clarifying the authority. It's giving us that and granting us that authority. This bill would do that. I've submitted some testimony that gets into some more details about some suggestions for potential amendments if we have a work session on this bill, and I'll just stop there and ask, be happy to answer any questions if you have any questions.
Okay, great. And we always encourage people to get together and come up with amendments before their work sessions. Any questions of the panel? Representative Widener?
One real quick, it kind of came back, because when I met with the City of Portland, Kevin, and it's one of the things that I thought of with you and with us having people up here from Eugene kind of prompted this a little bit, but one of the things, there's social services that these people receive in a lot of these areas as well, and I'm wondering if we wouldn't be more effective if we say, hey, you get busted twice or three times, you're losing your Oregon Trail card, you're losing your Oregon health plan, and we start doing things like that, and then they're going to be careful about being out in public doing these things because they don't want to lose their free ride. I'm wondering if something like that wouldn't be more effective than what we're going after here.
Chair Doherty and Representative Weiner, thank you for the question. I guess I have more of a comment to add to that is that these alcoholic beverages, high alcohol content, beverages that come in the large 24-ounce cans are also popular among youth and young adults that might not be accessing those benefits necessarily. So,
thank you very much. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much to the panel. We did have written testimony submitted. These were all testimony for the 2702, and we received it from Darbyshaw Bipa, who's the manager of Addiction Services Multnomah County, Sandra Storm, Helen Ying, Wendy Rahm, Richard Rahm, Bob Wright, Robert and Judith Bell, Susan Bliss, Mary Kramer, Jeff Wren, and Christine Nielsen. That was all written testimony. That's all that we have signed up. Anybody else want to speak on this bill? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on 2702, and I reopen the public hearing on 2332. And if you could go through, and it hasn't been long, but just refresh our memory as to what this is.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we're back to 2332. This is the nightclub endorsement. This basically, it requires the premises licensed by the OLCC to, with specific criteria, to obtain this nightclub endorsement from the OLCC. It directs the OLCC to adopt rules establishing elements of safety and security for the nightclubs, and it also allows the OLCC to establish a fee for the nightclub endorsement.
Okay. We have three people signed up, Bill Perry, Jeff Plue, and Farsad Aladadi. Thank you, gentlemen. I did reopen.
Good morning, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Farshad Aladadi. I'm the Director of License Services at the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Over the last year, staff from the OLCC have had discussions with Representative Tomei regarding licensed businesses that tend to be problematic in terms of public safety and community livability, and what might be done to prevent new businesses from becoming problems once licensed. We shared with the representative that when we look at licensed businesses that have become problems, we notice a handful of commonalities in their operations. Specifically, we've noticed businesses that have had problems typically have one or all or most of the following traits: relatively large capacity, late night operations, emphasis on alcohol sales over food service, and certain types of entertainment. From the agency's perspective, there are two major mechanisms for addressing the issues that arise from these types of operations. First, what I'll call the front end of our process is the licensing process, where we evaluate investigational criteria and apply licensing fees. This licensing process provides a screening mechanism that can limit risky operations from entering into the marketplace. And the back-end process, in addition to our ongoing compliance and enforcement operations, operational constraints placed on the license are designed to help prevent a business from becoming a problem. During our discussion with Representative Tomei, we also touched on some of the lessons learned from the nightclub license recently instituted in the state of Washington. As I understand it, one of the problems with Washington's nightclub license is that it is voluntary, that a business can choose to be licensed as a nightclub or they can seek another license type. Due to the cost of the license and some of those operational constraints, I do not believe that there have been many businesses opting for the nightclub license in Washington. And so any regulatory benefits of having this license type are somewhat diminished. House Bill 2332 addresses these issues by defining nightclubs, by establishing criteria based on occupancy levels, hours of operation, and emphasis on alcohol sales. It establishes an additional fee for businesses required to obtain a nightclub license or a nightclub endorsement. It places additional operation requirements on the license, and with few exceptions, it makes this endorsement mandatory rather than voluntary. There are currently over 6,800 licensed businesses that would need to be evaluated annually to determine if they would require a nightclub endorsement under this legislation. The evaluation represents a new and possibly significant addition to our current license investigation process and may have corresponding demands for new resources. Section 3 of the bill does present a potential complication with respect to timing. In this section, there requires the endorsements to start being applied on or before January 1st of 2014. In Section 2, Sub 1C, licensees would need to provide the agency quarterly sales revenue information from the preceding year. If the endorsements are to be applied next January, licensees would need to be preparing their quarterly revenue reports now for the first quarter of 2013. The agency would need time to prepare the reporting requirements and acceptable formats for the financial information that we are requesting from licensees, and we would anticipate that most licensees would expect to have more lead time to prepare this information. I have been working with my staff to see how we might implement this legislation, and it seems the most reasonable tack would be what I call a day forward implementation. That is, licensees are notified of the reporting requirements and the implications to their license of this legislation upon passage of the bill, and financial evaluations would occur 12 months after that. The evaluation would be synchronized to the licensee's annual renewal application, and in this scenario, the first nightclub endorsements would be applied sometime in the first quarter of 2015. I know that there's been some discussion about the need for an emergency clause, and I think that an emergency clause would cause this process to start sooner. However, we think the most binding part of this is the actual deadline of the January 1st, 2014 start date for the endorsements, and that piece would be actually more important to reconsider than an emergency clause. The agency recognizes the problems that some licensed businesses represent to our communities, and while we are neutral on this bill, we do recognize how this legislation helps. The OLCC is committed to continued active partnership with community members, hospitality industry, local governments, and legislators to find solutions to our shared public safety and livability concerns.
Thank you very much. Next.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, Bill Perry at the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. I gave you testimony, and I obviously won't cover all the points on there, but I did hear Representative Tomei's concerns and everything else, and I do think there's neighborhood concerns, obviously, in a lot of different areas around the state. I'm not sure that this bill specifically addresses it. And I just want to throw out a few examples when you're talking about Section 2 in the bill, or Section C of the Section 2 of the bill. When you talk about alcohol sales, and you have to have a room that is an occupancy, not seating, occupancy of over 100. There's a lot of those rooms in this state. The OLCC just said there's 6,800 of these licenses out there. I don't know how many of them have 100-person occupancy. It's not seating. When you look at the definitions here, I would argue that every bowling alley in the state is going to fall under this definition. If you're a winery or a microbrewery and you sell either kegs or bottles of wine to go, you're going to fall under this definition because it just says your alcohol sales have to exceed your food sales. And so this is going to cast a pretty wide net that is nowhere near targeted at what I think the concerns were that were brought up. So I would say if you're looking at moving forward on this, this has to be brought up. And, you know, a nightclub, I've talked to several of you about definitions, but, you know, you always hear these arguments about what's art and what isn't. You know, art's kind of, you know it when you see it. But I think defining nightclubs is going to be harder than you think just because of the nature of the industry and the seasonality of sales that happens in different things. And Mr. Blue is going to speak next, is going to talk about some of the things you do as a nightclub and some of the things at restaurants, but this is going to include far more places than you believe it probably does, or what I think the drafters of the bills did. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Perry. Okay.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Blue. I'm one of the partners of Concept Entertainment. We own and operate 9 establishments in Oregon. They're a diverse group. We have nightclubs, bars, and restful restaurants. And as in the nightclub piece, we have a lot of things that we have to do with the state as a DPS test and work with the OLCC and then local communities. But my concern is I have a chain called Thirsty Lion, and they're a restaurant. And my chain of these restaurants, there's 3 of them right now, and they will fall into this. We have 2 of them that are more suburban than they are downtown located. The little pub downtown, it's a smaller place, and its seating's 245 people. It can be affected in one quarter and put me into that nightclub licensing because of maybe what happens on the waterfront or the soccer tournaments. Rose Festival, Beer Gardens, or the Beer Fest, even St. Patty's Day. And then throughout the summertime, it's a lot busier downtown, and it is winter. So in that one location, it would be deemed as a nightclub. When we have the same menu at all 3 locations, our same marketing is the market for a restaurant, and it's not a nightclub. So I'm open for any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the panelists? Thank you, and thank you for adding St. Patrick's Day.
Yes. Candidly, I didn't realize Representative Tomei was the only proponent of the bill. Otherwise, I would have directed my comments to her. But the 2 things I want to flag here. Number 1, of course, the definitions. I'm relatively confident the Milwaukee Elks Club would be a nightclub under these definitions. So that's something we'd have to try and tie down. Number 2, actually, is I think the premise of the bill. What is the problem we're trying to solve? Is the problem today of nightclubs such, is it any different than it was in the 1890s or the 1950s or the 1990s? Is this a new problem in any way, shape, or form? Has any state been able to get at this? I'm skeptical myself. That's all.
Thank you very much. Any other questions, Representative Witt?
Madam Chair, just a comment. I guess we're going to upgrade all the taverns in Columbia County to nightclubs. Thank you very much.
Any other questions, Representative Kennemer?
Yes, of Representative Witt, is that an upgrade?
That is in there for the record. Okay, any other questions? Thank you very much. Those are the only 3 we had signed up. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on House Bill 2332? Seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2332, and I open up a hearing on public hearing on House Bill 2885. If you could read what the summary of this bill is, please.
Sure. This is House Bill 2885, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and this establishes the OLCC license fee surcharges for license types including full on-premise sales, limited on-premise sales, and off-premise sales for alcoholic beverages. It also dedicates the surcharge for payments to cities or counties for public safety.
Okay.
We have a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means on this.
Thank you very much. Okay, we have actually 4 people signed up. If you want to come up. And that's Cindy Robert, Mr. Aladotti, Lindsay Atkins, and Scott Winkles. So just get cozy up there.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert. I represent the city of Medford. I'm sure you're getting a little tired of hearing about OLCC bills, but this one's a little out of the box, so I ask that you give me a couple minutes to explain it.
HB 2885 is about financing local public safety, whether it's police, fire, drug and alcohol treatment centers, or social services for those impaired by alcohol. The bill is also about fairness. For how many sessions has this body been trying to find some way to fund local public safety? The city of Medford looked at one of its biggest impacts on law enforcement, which is alcohol-related arrests, and said, wait a minute, here's the answer, and it's all about equity. HB 2885 funds local public safety based on local liquor consumption revenues. So some of the bill's a little confusing, and I won't take long, Madam Chair, but some of the deletions and additions in HB 2885 are technical changes to the law done by LC. They do not change the policy. The major policy change is this. Page 2, lines 20 and 21, current off-premise licenses are $100, and limited on-premise licenses are $200. Then on page 4, line 42, current full on-premise licenses are $400. So your off-premise is your grocer, your limited on-premise is your restaurant doing beer and wine, and your full on-premise is your restaurant with a full bar. This means that the bistro in your town with six tables pays the same for their liquor license as the chain restaurant with 200 tables. It also means that the corner grocery store in your town pays the same for their liquor license as the Costco or Fred Meyer. Clearly, these larger establishments have varying and different impact on public safety resources used related to alcohol arrests. This bill just makes an establishment pay accordingly. It graduates the license fee for on-premise and off-premise sales based on alcohol revenue from the year before. Your small establishments pay the same as they've paid in past years. Your larger ones pay a little bit more. Now, there's lots of blanks in the bills. This is because Medford is not an expert on liquor revenue. We didn't know where the natural breaks in revenue were, how much was a minimum and a maximum for a restaurant or a grocer. But the OLCC knows. They collect this information. I guarantee you that they have it, and they could help us fill in those blanks. And I actually provided the OLCC with the bill last fall, hoping to have that kind of conversation. So this is a big change. This changes how we look at liquor licensing in Oregon and dedicates that money to public safety. It's a direct connection. We think it makes sense. However, it's a big conversation, and we understand that. So we ask you to ask yourself, does it make sense? Does this kind of move make sense? Could this be the answer we have been looking for? And if so, direct those stakeholders who are interested in the issue to sit down and work it out. If not for this session, then for 2014. It's a direct effect. It's about financing and fairness.
Okay, thank you very much. Next one. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lindsay Adkison, and I'm a community health analyst for Lane County. I'm providing testimony on behalf of Alex Kyler, who wasn't able to be here today. Lane County supports the continued work of this committee on House Bill 2885. Alcohol is directly related to public safety issues. Auto, bike, and pedestrian fatalities in Lane County are second highest in the state. Many of these are alcohol-related. We no longer have DUI specific deputy assigned to patrol county roads due to the budget cuts and the sunset of an ODOT safety division grant that funded the deputy. The county has recently lost court-related revenue that provided money for district attorney services specifically related to alcohol enforcement. Our DA used the county enforcement fund to support alcohol abuse-related education and prevention. We will be seeking additional public safety dollars in May with a five-year levy, but revenue will be limited for jail beds and youth treatment services. House Bill 2885 would be a welcome source of revenue that we would like to use to bolster patrol services and prosecution services as well as treatment and prevention. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm Scott Winkles, representing the League of Oregon Cities, and I'm appearing in favor of the bill. I would like to point out in 2007, the League, along with, I'm sorry, 2008, the League, along with the OLCC and some other partners, conducted some studies on alcohol costs associated with local government. And what we have found is that we're losing money. Local governments, cities in particular, are losing money on this deal. A single DUI arrest can take up 8 hours of a police officer's time. Most of that will be on overtime, dealing with hearings and such. A DUI-related injury, fatality, accident can take up to 40 hours of police officer time. Again, most of that is going to be on overtime. It is the impression of many city officials that the state tends to view alcohol consumption as a revenue source, whereas your local partners view this as a cost. And so anything that we can do to help bring some, at least get us to a break-even point, the League is going to be supportive of.
Okay, thank you. Make room for Mr. Aliadada.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. Members of the committee, for the record, again, my name is Farshad Aliadadi, Director of Licensing at the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. The Oregon Liquor Control Commission supports the state and local governments by distributing revenues collected from various sources. License fees are only one of those sources, the others being beer and wine tax collection and the sale of distilled spirits. The OLCC works very hard to create and maintain strong working relationships with our, and policy-level relationships with our local governments and law enforcement. And these engagements range from collaborations and license investigations, enforcement operations, all the way up to policy setting. And we work hard to meet the needs of local communities as allowed by law. And where possible, we look to change laws to give us and the local communities more tools. As I've touched on, in my testimony earlier, the OLCC is acutely aware of the negative impacts that can arise from licensed businesses. I mentioned in my earlier remarks that increased license fees may be an effective and reasonable tool to limit the number of high-risk businesses entering the marketplace. As Ms. Roberts spoke to earlier, we have some of the lowest, if not the lowest, license fees in the country. You could pay as little as $100 to sell alcohol in this state. In a study of how liquor revenues are used by local governments, which the legislature directed the agency to conduct in 2005 through a budget note, we see that alcohol is a major contributor to crime and negative livability in our communities. It is also reported that revenues distributed to the local governments by the OLCC fall short of the costs associated with those crimes. House Bill 2885 would help bridge the funding gaps created by creating surcharges for the three major retail license types and an increasing level based on sales. Again, we presume these revenues would be used to help offset the direct and indirect costs associated with alcohol consumption. The OLCC generates approximately $3.6 million in license revenues annually from these three license types, and we believe that the surcharge revenues, these additional revenues, would far exceed that amount, though one difference of opinion, the OLCC does not track sales level data of licensees, so it's difficult for us to determine at this point how much revenue exactly would be collected. For the OLCC, however, these new mechanisms by which the surcharge would be determined, assessed, collected, and distributed are anticipated to require significant additional staff and system resources. New processes for data collection, evaluation, and auditing would need to be established to ensure the correct reporting and full collection and distribution of the surcharges back to the local communities. While we're strong supporters of our community's public safety and livability interests, we are neutral on this bill, and we hope that the considerations are given to the additional agency resources that may be necessary to effectively execute this legislation.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Any questions of the panelists? Representative Barton, then we'll go down to the end.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did miss about 2 minutes of Ms. Roberts' testimony, so it's possible that this was covered. But I'm actually just looking for some data in terms of how much money this would actually generate net to local governments. Also, I understand Mr. Winkle's comments about the different perceptions. It was my impression, and I'm truly no expert, that the OLCC directed a significant amount of revenue to both cities and counties through the essentially beer and wine tax, alcohol tax. How much money are we talking about relative to the issue? That was not well articulated, but hopefully you get the gist of where I'm going.
We got it.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Barton, actually, it's very hard for us to tell on this bill, too. As I mentioned, there's a lot of blanks in the bill because we don't know where the natural divisions lie on how much restaurants or grocers are making from their liquor. So, and as the OLCC has pointed out, it's going to take some look at the numbers to figure out where those natural divisions are. That being said, Representative, I think that's really why I say this is a big concept. Mm-hmm. This is a big idea. But you've heard from this table, it's a good idea. So let's look at it further and answer some of those questions. Unfortunately, it's just not going to happen on its own. We need the leadership of this committee. We need the legislature to say to this group and others, go and look at this. This is a good idea. Figure it out. Let's see how to make this work for paying for law enforcement and bringing fairness into the licensing system.
Somebody else want to?
Chair Doherty, Representative Vice Chair Barton. You're correct. The state does, it's not so much the share of the tax, it's a share of the revenue since the state is the seller of the alcohol. But we do, local governments do get a distribution of that revenue, but what the revenue does not meet expenses.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Barton, I can give you some statistics that might kind of frame the magnitude of what we're talking about here. And first, just a clarification that beer and wine tax is not the only revenue source that goes to cities and counties. Like I mentioned earlier, the major revenue sources are the sale from distilled spirits, which account for about 95% of all of our revenue generated. And then we have privilege taxes assessed on the sale of beer and wine. And then license fees is a very small slice of the pie. I can tell you that in the years 2009, or the fiscal years 2009 to 2011, Oregon cities received $104.2 million in total distribution, and counties received $30.7 million in total distribution. And just for context, the state general fund received $199 million in distribution. Mm-hmm. So this, in my testimony, I talk about the revenue allocated or generated from the three license types that this bill would impact. Currently is about $3.6 million annually. Again, since we do not track sales level data by licensees, it's difficult for us to determine exactly where or and how much additional revenue a surcharge may generate.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Mr. Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious. You said that the bulk of OLCC sales are distilled spirits. Round figures, a $20 bottle, of that $20, what's taxes and fees, what's the revenuers take on that $20?
Sure. Well, and let me put it in terms of rate of return. For every dollar that the agency expends, and that includes public safety, administration, every aspect of our operations, for every dollar that we expend, the state returns back to its beneficiaries between $2.50 and $3. It's about, I think last time we looked, it's about $3.80-ish, or $2.80-ish. So it's a significant amount that we return back in terms of margin.
Yeah. Question, Representative Whitener, or are you finished, Representative Witt?
Thank you. I just think that at some point we probably taxed that alcohol sales enough.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
Yeah, I would have liked a little clearer answer on that, but one of the things you touched on is you were saying people can obtain a license for as little as $100. Let's just say your little restaurant that your main deal is serving food or a fine restaurant and you only have about 20, maybe 30 patrons a night. What would they pay for a full license for that restaurant?
They would pay for a full license. The privileges to sell beer, wine, and distilled spirits would cost them annually $400.
$400?
$400.
So it's came down because was it not $800 a year?
No, I think we've had in past sessions, we've had legislation proposed to increase the license cost or to put initial licensing fees, but these license costs have not changed in some time.
It's about $400 a year. Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Okay, those are the only people we have signed up for House Bill 2885. You're just waiting for the next one. Anybody else on House Bill 2885? You see none. I close the public hearing on 2885 and open up the public hearing for 2886. And so, since you guys are up there, pardon?
Do you want me to read something?
Yes.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is House Bill 2886, and this imposes conditions for the OLCC approval of license application following an unfavorable recommendation by the local governing body.
Okay.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, I'm Cindy Robert. I'm from the city of Medford, and you must think that we're drinking a lot down there because we're coming up here and bothering all of you. But this is the last bill for us today, and I'm hoping that we will be back but for a work session on the next one. House Bill 2886 is about local input into their communities. That's all. That's all it's about. It allows locals with firsthand knowledge to have a say in who should receive a liquor license and who should not. You may have been told that this is already the case. I assure you, it is not. On the bill, page 2, line 8 says, OLCC may require an applicant to acquire a written recommendation from a local government. Page 2, line 16, if the commission requires an applicant to acquire a recommendation. OLCC does not have to ask for local input on license applications. And when they do ask, it is often ignored. Cities in this room will attest to that. When your local government says no, OLCC often says yes. House Bill 2886 sets up a fair process for local input, including adoption of guidelines for the recommendation process formed with public notice and hearings. It then allows OLCC to approve those local guidelines if they fit within their rules and criteria already established for use by OLCC in ORS 471313. Then it allows public comment on each application being considered. While House Bill 2886 allows cities to collect fees for processing the application, that is not new. That was already in the law in ORS 471166. The section just moved. Finally, it states that page 3, lines 34 through 36, it clearly states that if a local government provides an unfavorable recommendation, so too must the OLCC if the OLCC finds that the exact same criteria they use were used by the local government. Local governments applying the same criteria that OLCC does, the citizens who know, the law enforcement officials who know, and the businesses who know providing information. It just makes sense. But wait, there's also an appeals process. For those people who feel like they were unfairly denied an application, they still have the ability to go to the OLCC, give a response to the grounds for the negative recommendation, and the OLCC can, in fact, overturn that decision. So there's plenty of fairness. It's time we did this. OLCC cannot be expected to know all, and they cannot be expected to decide all. Local communities have a right in the say as long as the process is open, fair, has established criteria, and an appeals process. House Bill 2886 has all these things, and we need you to assure that your citizen input matters.
Okay, thank you. Sure.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, again, my name is Farshad Aladadi, Director of Licensing at the OLCC, and I have some remarks here, but I think I'm going to kind of veer from the script a little bit to address some of the issues that Ms. Roberts raised. The OLCC currently has a process, and it's a very important process into our licensing decisions for local governments. It exists today. What we have is, in certain situations, local governments, for different reasons, choosing to engage in that process or not. While it is true we do not force local governments to give us a recommendation, we accept every recommendation. And when a local government gives us a negative recommendation on a license application currently, unless the staff agrees with the negative recommendation and has grounds to deny the license, those recommendations, every one of them, are presented to our Board of Commissioners for final decision. So I think what we have here is perhaps a difference of perspective, and It is true that at times local governments' recommendations are overturned by the Board of Commissions in their meeting, but the process exists today. Now, back on the script. House Bill 2886 alters the process in which local or liquor license decisions are made in three important ways. First, it would mandate that conforming unfavorable local government recommendations result in automatic negative commission decisions on the license application. And that condition potentially shifts the state's authority for making license decisions to local governments. Right now, state law gives that authority solely to the commission. The second point is that it may lead to inconsistent license decisions across the state. Some jurisdictions take a more active role in the licensing process by making recommendations, and others choose not to make recommendations. Local jurisdictions, with their respective interests, may make negative recommendations without the benefit of understanding the applicability of Oregon's, granted at times, complex liquor laws. Or the state's broader public safety and economic policy interests. By dispersing the liquor licensing decisions among local governments, central oversight that maintains equal treatment and consistent decisions may be degraded. And lastly, by requiring the commission to vote in a supermajority, a four-fifths majority, in favor of granting licenses over the negative recommendation of a local government, House Bill 2886 may be in conflict with public meeting laws. Today, the commission may hold a public meeting if there's a quorum present. That's 3 of 5. And a legal vote for that quorum is the majority. And since this bill would require 4/5 to overturn a local government recommendation, you can see the conflict. As I stated in my previous testimonies this morning, the OLCC works very hard to maintain effective relationships with our local government partners. We are strong supporters of our shared communities and public safety and livability interests. And it's very important the current role local governments play in the licensing process. Though we are neutral on this bill, we hope that the consideration is given to the potential risks of inconsistency and legal conflicts that may arise from this legislation.
Yeah, fine, thank you. Any questions of the panelists? Okay, thank you very much. Okay. How about Bill Perry and Dan Lenzen?
He's with us too, Mike Mills.
Okay. Mike Mills, okay. Well, we do have, Mr. Huffman also, unless you want four of you up there. We don't want him up here by himself, so. So we'll just call the four of you together.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. Coming around to you is some written testimony that's got some handouts attached to the back, so I'll kind of do a brief overview before I get to the handouts, but I'm going to refer to the handouts. Obviously, I think there's a lot of problems, bars, restaurants out there. I don't think anybody would deny that. I would say the biggest gap in the process today is the communication between local government and the OLCC. And I would say that actually these hearings, which some of you have participated in, I've found more about problem licensees than I've ever found from the OLCC, meaning there was a Medford licensee where somebody was throwing beer bottles off the roof that came up. And so I went back and investigated it, and the OLCC was not notified of that incident until the recommendation process came up some 6 months later. They investigated it, and the licensee withdrew his license. So why he was not notified for 6 months, I don't know. Representative Witt was in a hearing a couple of sessions ago where somebody came in and said there was gunshots fired at a place over on Hawthorne. So we went, investigated, checked with OLCC. There was no record of that happening at OLCC. Now, I'm not saying it didn't happen, but the breakdown today is happening, in my opinion, between the cities and the OLCC, not after the OLCC gets there. I think you all have my handouts now. So basically, I called the OLCC at the beginning of the session because I knew this was going to come up. And on the second page, I basically said, Farshad said in the past bill that there's 6,800 licenses in the state, off on premise, both limited and full. 6,800. There are six negative recommendations turned in by local government last calendar year. Six out of 6,800. Now, I will tell you, are there more than six problem bars out there? I'm sure there are. There's no denial there. But where is the communication lack happening? And when you look at the, it's got the listings in there. One was issued, one wasn't, and four are in the process of compliance plans. So that doesn't sound like a system that's flawed, in my opinion, from the OLCC. Now, people have heard me say this, and so City of Portland has now started issuing more negative recommendations. Obviously, they've issued a negative recommendation for every video retailer on Hayden Island. Once again, there are probably some problems there, but I don't think all of them are problems. This has become a political football more than an actual how do we solve a problem. So I also, just for funny purposes, if you go to the next one, this is an actual license application for Cartlandia. This is the food cart pod that got a liquor license in the city of Portland. And if you remember reading in the papers, City of Portland was up in arms that OLCC would even consider this. If you would look up in the right-hand corner of this application, okay, local government recommends granting of this liquor license. City of Portland recommended granting the liquor license. They're in the papers blaming OLCC for issuing. The communication problem exists between local governments and OLCC. Now, I don't want to sit here and say I want to beat up on local government. We need to solve the problem, but we need to use the current system, have thoughtful recommendations coming up from the local governments to OLCC, and if for some reason OLCC then issues a license to a problem establishment, that's a problem we can fix. That is a problem that we can fix. But the current system is either not being utilized or being utilized for political purposes, and that's the problem as I see it today. And with that, I'll let some of the other speakers speak, and then I will be happy to answer questions.
We have you two and another two in 15 minutes, so we'll be watching the clock.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I am Dan Lenz, and I'm one of the principals with Concept Entertainment, and been in business with having liquor licenses for 9 and 20 years, and also an eternal volunteerist. Having built many, many restaurants, bars, and nightclubs through the years, I'll just give you my anecdotal experience. The neighborhood associations and local governments have their input all the way along in this. Having been an eternal volunteerist as well, involved in neighborhood associations, I've had my opportunity to be able to give my input to the cities that I've been in all along. The cities have their opportunities to be able to have their input from the time we start breaking ground on a building all the way through the license process. So my opinion is that I think the cities have process already in place to be able to give input.
Thank you very much. Mr. Huffman?
Yes, Madam Chairman Doherty, Vice Chairman Martin, and committee. My name for the record is William Huffman. I own two 7-Eleven stores in Coos Bay, and I'm president of the Columbia Pacific 7-Eleven Franchise Owners Association. So I represent multiple stores throughout the state, 7-Eleven stores. We are opposed to Bill 2086. Statewide standards, while not perfect, they're working now. They give us a level playing field. If we change this, it's going to change the cost and the complexity of the licensing portion of this, and that's hard on small business people. One of our fears about this bill is that it could be used by political groups that don't want a store in a neighborhood. Deny them a liquor license. It's pretty hard in the convenience store business to be in business without selling alcohol and tobacco. Again, we want to do it responsibly, but we want the opportunity to do it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
And then Mike.
Any other gentleman?
Just pull up, Chair.
It's okay, Madam Chair.
That's perfect. As long as you got the microphone close enough, that's fine with us.
Thank you. Chair Doherty, members of the Commission, my name is Michael Mills. Members of the committee, excuse me. I'm used to speaking before the OLCC. My name is Michael Mills. I'm a lawyer. Been practicing in Oregon since 1972. And I have to say I'm feeling my age a little bit now because in 1972, when I graduated from Lamet, Representative Barton's father was a classmate of mine. And I can't believe how much water has passed under the bridge since then, seeing him up there in front of me. I have, for the last 5 years, almost exclusively focused my practice on OLCC and lottery issues, and I represent private clients who come to me for various problems with the OLCC and through the license application process. And I echo the comments of Mr. Perry and Mr. Aladotti from the OLCC that there already is local input that is available to the local governments into the OLCC process, and I can testify that the OLCC routinely listens to the local government input. I go and I meet with license investigators from time to time, and we discuss on my client's behalf, we discuss the local input, and we talk about what my client can do to maybe meet some of those issues if it's possible, and we try to get it smoothed out before we get to the actual contested case process. So there is local input, and I believe that a part of the problem is the communication between the cities and counties governments and the OLCC as far as getting information to the OLCC about what they perceive to be the problem with an applicant or a problem with an existing licensee. House Bill 2886 substantially changes the dynamics of the application process, and even though the applicant, after a negative endorsement, even though the applicant specifically and adequately addresses the issues that were brought up under the terms of the negative endorsement, it adds a burden of persuasion on the applicant to convince four of the commissioners that he should be given a license rather than just three as it now stands. I believe it removes responsibility from the OLCC as the statutory and constitutional agency responsible for overall liquor licensing in the state of Oregon, and I am here to oppose that bill. Thank you, and I also am open to any questions.
Thank you very much. Do we have questions of the panel? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. Okay, the last three we have, Andy Smith, Teresa Marchetti, and Scott Winkles.
Good morning again, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, Andy Smith for the City of Portland. Wanted to set the stage for Teresa, who's our liquor licensing specialist in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. The Oregon Liquor Control Commission is supposed to interpret the Liquor Control Act in sales and regulatory and licensing decisions to protect the public health, safety, and welfare. It's right there in the statute. And the fundamental challenge we face is that local government recommendations in statute don't carry the necessary language that requires the commission to give them the weight they deserve, and I think the weight that the Liquor Control Act intends to give them. So in a licensing decision, input from a local government on public health, safety, and welfare should be, a primary basis for which these things are analyzed. Police are in the best position in the community to tell the Liquor Control Commission if a license is going to cause additional public safety problems. Our neighborhood folks who work closely with neighborhood associations are in the best position to hear from constituents to recommend whether or not a license is going to be good for that neighborhood for livability issues. And in addition to that, I'd just like to correct a couple things that were said earlier. First of all, just in the city of Portland last year, there were 467, I believe, license applications. We gave 20 unfavorable recommendations. Of those, everyone was granted against our recommendation. So the earlier number that was cited as six unfavorables in the whole state is incorrect, just based on our numbers. The other one I wanted to say is that the frequency with which the commission denies a license after an unfavorable was stated as at times the commission agrees with the local government and denies the license. Well, in our experience at the city, nobody that I've worked with in the liquor licensing division at the Office of Neighborhood Involvement or at the Portland Police Bureau can ever remember the commission agreeing with the local government and denying a license based on public health, safety, and welfare considerations. So I would say that it's nearly a carte blanche policy to to issue over the recommendation. I think it's because there's not enough guidance in statute about how much weight should be given to them. So I'll turn it over to Teresa, but we support the bill and urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Teresa Marchetti. I'm the City of Portland's liquor licensing specialist. And thank you for the opportunity to offer our support of House Bill 2886. As Andy pointed out, we give a recommendation on every liquor license that comes within the City of Portland city limits. And there are about 2,900 liquor licenses, retail licenses, that do business in the City of Portland. 460 to 500 applications a year. Last year, we gave 20 unfavorable recommendations based on problems with the applicant, problems with the location, problem area. All of this criteria is currently defined in statute. We use the same criteria that the OLCC does in analyzing these applications. We feel that local governments, particularly the police, the communities that these licenses are located in, are closest to the issues, can speak to the issues better than perhaps the OLCC is aware of. I do want to address just real briefly a couple of the comments that were made before. We do give a recommendation potentially on renewal applications, and that was what was cited previously for Hayden Island, but it hasn't been every location up there. There's been a number of locations up there that have had documented illegal drug activity occurring, and those have received an unfavorable recommendation from the city. Additionally, with the Cartlandia license related to exclusively outdoor areas, we've been in close contact with the OLCC on that issue. There were not rules to address just licensing of exterior areas that did not that wasn't attached to a structure. We're currently in rulemaking on that, which has been a positive move. However, We continue to have a difficult time with having weight given to the recommendations that are issued by the local government, and we feel like this bill is a reasonable step in the right direction with the appropriate oversight afforded by the OLCC, and we're in strong support. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Winkles.
For the record, I'm Scott Winkles, representing the League of Oregon Cities. I'm appearing in favor of this legislation. I won't repeat the testimony from Ms. Marchetti or my colleague, Mr. Smith, but I will say that, you know, I find myself going to a lot of OLCC meetings and hearings, and I'm going to relay a couple of instances I've witnessed where a local government issued a negative recommendation and it was not complied with by, and it was not given the weight we felt it deserved. In the last year, I attended a meeting where a licensee was seeking a license for a new establishment. He was opening up. His previous establishment had been closed. And in that, part of the reason that establishment closed was that it had turned into a hangout for a certain criminal element in which a person had been killed. The licensee also ended up stripping the facility of furniture. There was some serious damage to that facility. The local government, City of Portland, issued a negative endorsement. License was granted with the admonishment that we're going to watch you closely, but if you understand how what's happened to liquor inspectors in the state over the year, you'll understand that that's not really a viable threat. There's simply not enough resources to do that. I'm aware of another instance, while in attendance of a OLCC commission, where what we call either a puppet or a ghost license was granted, where a person who was a relative of another individual who was barred from having a liquor license applied for the license for the same establishment. The previous licensee was prohibited from entering that establishment as a restriction. However, without a motion from either the new licensee's attorney or a request, any request, the commission of their own volition amended those restrictions to allow the person who was clearly the owner of the controller of that establishment to go back into the property during off hours to make this ghost licensee even more efficient for this person. These are the sorts of frustrations that local governments occur when we're offering when we offer this input. I don't want to bash the agency too harshly, and I'm even going to commend them. I think the new rules that they've amended filed on their own to address the illegal activity in the establishments are good. I think that was a wonderful thing that they've done, but we still need to address this local impact. And I would simply ask, who is better to determine if a licensee is going to be a threat to the public health and safety than the local police chief, than that local government who deals with that business on a day-in, day-out basis? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions of the panelists? Representative Barton.
Thank you. Question for Ms. Marchetti. Mm-hmm. This may seem like it's hostile. I really don't intend it in a hostile way. I really appreciate your coming down. You're closer to this than anyone else. So your office probably weighs in on more than two applications per workday year-round. Why do you do it? If you feel that OLCC doesn't listen, why bother? It's a fair amount of work, I would think.
Chair Dowdy and members of the committee, thank you for the question. I believe it's a fight worth fighting. I see every day, working with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, the carnage that is caused by alcohol abuse, that's caused by establishments that sort of run ramshot over their communities. So I do believe that it's a point worth making. I think that even though the recommendation process currently does not carry a lot of weight, I think that can change starting with this committee. I also believe that there are other changes that can be made at a local level, and we work in that way as well. The recommendation process is just one small sliver of a pool of strategies that we use to address alcohol problems and alcohol establishments, and also to bring to light the positive, the good actors, the positive actors. Like I said, you're talking about less than 5% of the applications that we receive on a yearly basis that get an unfavorable recommendation. The rest of those businesses contribute to a vibrant Portland, and we want them, and we want to support them. But they are also suffering the consequences of some of these other locations. Thank you, though, for your question.
And Chair Dougherty, sorry, if I could just add one quick
very,
thing.
Very quickly, please.
So I think another reason that the City of Portland engages in this process is because we hear it from our constituents, and they were their first place to go when there's a problem in the neighborhood. So I think that we feel like we're providing a service to them by, keeping an eye out and advocating on their behalf at the OLCC.
Okay, thank you. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
Quick
question, please.
Real quick. You mentioned Hayden Island, and a lot of those were drug use. How many arrests have been made for the drug use at some of these facilities? So can we document that to where you could use that to present to OLCC, or has that been done?
Chair Dougherty, Representative Widener, and member of the committee, Widener, excuse me. Thank you for the question. Yes, it has been well documented. It has been presented to the commission. We're waiting for the official committee or commission hearing, which I believe will occur in April. But there are binders of reports that are associated with a fairly short period of time on Hayden Island, and represent an extensive amount of work that's been done by the law enforcement officers on Hayden Island. And I'd be happy to share those numbers with you. I just don't have them right off the bat. So.
With that, could you bring me some information? Because California, I'd like to see how we kind of compare with them, because you can buy alcohol right off the grocery, out of the grocery store there. So, because it's kind of weird when I showed up there and it's like, whoa, what's this? You know? So I'd just like to see how we compare with California, where it's open and accessible everywhere as well. So.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions of the panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, those are the last people we have signed up. Is there anybody else who would like to speak in favor of or speak on the bill of 2886? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2886. And seeing no other business, I adjourn the House Committee on Business and Labor for March 8, 2013.